live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a starting receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Yes, it is about that time. You are now listening to WKAR's Current Sports on this Friday, December 6th. 2019. Wow, we've made it to the end of the week already. Time has absolutely flown by, and we plan on ushering you into the weekend with a bang here on WKAR's Current Sports. A lot to talk about. And if you care, because many of our listeners out there, they hit me up yesterday, the last night, I should say, during the debacle that was the Dallas Cowboys loss to the Chicago Bears. I'm trying to hold it together. Yep. I know. Yep. That was right on cue. Look, even Alec Rio is torching me. Alec behind the glass, engineer of today's Current Sports. Yeah, the Bears were really good last night, but we didn't help ourselves at all. This Cowboys team needs a complete overhaul right now. Jason Garrett, it's inevitable that he will be fired at some point. Looks as though he's going to keep his job at least for another week. That's what reports are saying. But he will not be the coach after this season. And what's so remarkable is that the Dallas Cowboys, my Cowboys, are still in first place of the NFC East. And still in the playoff picture right now. This to show you just how bad that division is. But I'm holding it together. I may need some therapy at some point later on today. Cowboys fans everywhere are not feeling good today. But I'm going to try and put a pep in my step today and up the energy and up the positivity, because I want to put together a great show for you guys. As we will talk about the NFL, well, I want to take a broad look picture at the NFL right now. Of course, I do want to talk about the Detroit Lions. As I previewed on the Thursday edition of the show, you know, I have some thoughts on Matthew Stafford deciding to come back and play more football. He believes he still has a lot of football left in him, despite the fact that now it's been back-to-back years in which it has been found that in his back, he has had fractures. Yeah, this is your back, folks, one of the most important parts of your body, especially in athletics. And he has had fractures in his back playing one of the most physical games on planet Earth in the world of athletics. And he still wants to play, still wants to continue to play. So I got some thoughts on that and the future of the Detroit Lions as they embark on the rematch that will be the Minnesota Vikings this Sunday. But I just want to take a broad look picture at what the playoff picture looks like and some really compelling storylines across the National Football League. I love watching the NFL, especially around playoff time, because we are knocking on the door of the playoffs right now. Nothing is more exciting, right? Awesome, awesome stuff, and a lot of great storylines around the National Football League. We'll also have Reflection Friday for you guys. I do want to comment on what will be the big fight of the weekend, that being Andy Ruiz taking on Anthony Joshua. Number two, yeah, Ruiz, a brother who does not look like he has ran a lap in his life. And he's like knocking on the door of 300 pounds. He stunned the boxing world in defeating a man who looks like he has been chiseled out of a Greek god's story in Anthony Joshua. He knocked out Anthony Joshua. Remember that fight? Well, the rematch will take place this weekend. I want to touch on that. And our guest for today's Current Sports will be a feature Friday interview with Dwayne Miner, who is a longtime horse racing trainer based in the Sunshine State that is Florida. And he is actually the first African-American to drive the richest event in harness racing. If you don't know what harness racing is, that's basically when you see horses that are dragging like a chariot, like a carriage in the back of them, and you see the racer in the back of that horse. Well, you know, the Hamiltonian is basically like the Kentucky Derby of harness racing. And Dwayne Miner was the first African-American to drive in that race. Pretty amazing stuff. So we'll talk about, you know, what it's like for Dwayne being in this sport, you know, and carving out a pretty good living in the sport of horse racing. And, you know, doing it as a black man. You don't see too many African-Americans training horses professionally within the sport of horse racing. That's pretty awesome. And Dwayne is going to give us also some insight into a story that we have touched on multiple times throughout the show, especially dating back to this past summer when it comes to Santa Anita and why so many horses have died at Santa Anita, which is, Santa Anita Park in California, a pretty famous location when it comes to the sport of horse racing. All right. So that will be your feature Friday interview for today. You don't want to miss that. If you would like to be a part of the show, multiple ways in which you can do so. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. You can also weigh in at facebook.com/WKAR News. Watch the live stream there and comment below that stream. And also tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Here are your quick hit headliners. Let's start here with the Michigan State women's basketball team as Susie Merchant's squad. They fought hard to stay in the game against number 8 Florida State on the road, but a 29-point fourth quarter effort from the Seminoles proved to be too much to handle as the Spartans fell 78-68 last night. Now, Nia Clouden, she led the way with 22 points. Shea Colley had 11. They were the only two players from Michigan State to reach double digits scoring in the loss. And as a unit, did not reach 20 points in any of all four quarters. So this marks MSU's second loss on the year. 6-2 on the season is where they stand. And both losses were to ranked opponents. The Spartans look to regroup as they will host the Moorhead State Eagles on Sunday at 1 p.m. All right, the MSU men's basketball team will start Big Ten play this Sunday against Rutgers at 7 p.m. This should be an easy win for Tom Izzo's squad, but we'll see. should be the first of many games that will help further develop the chemistry and shake off some of the tweaks and hopefully give some confidence back to a team that certainly needs it after that big loss on Tuesday against Duke. Cassius Winston, he's coming off a 12-point affair. He'll look to bounce back as well as Aaron Henry after Henry only attempted two shots in total on Tuesday night. And MSU's bench also has an opportunity to step up after only a combined effort of 24 points. So, and one can assume free throws and defending the three will be points of focus in this week's practice as they went 15 of 23 from the line, and Duke shot 46.7% from three. So MSU and Rutgers on Sunday. We'll see what happens there. Also, the Michigan men's basketball team will be in action tonight as Juwan Howard and his Michigan squad will begin Big Ten play as they host the Iowa Hawkeyes tonight at 6:30 p.m. after huge wins against North Carolina and Gonzaga in the Battle for Atlantis tournament out in the Bahamas. Both top 10 ranked matchups. The Wolverines did get stonewalled by number one Louisville in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. That was a 58-43 final earlier this week. So Michigan will move on to face the Hawkeyes tonight, a team that can't be overlooked. Right now, the Hawkeyes are 6-2 on the year, defeating the likes of Texas Tech and Syracuse so far this season. So that action will tip off on Fox Sports 1 tonight. All right, MSU hockey also embarking on a doubleheader starting tonight against Wisconsin. That's right, the sixth-place Badgers and fourth-place Spartans head into this weekend series one game below 500. Wisconsin, coming off a split against Michigan, is 7-8-1 overall and a disappointing 2-5-1-1 in the Big Ten. Michigan State is 6-7-1. And a positive 4-3-1-0, 13 points in the Big Ten, but disappointed by getting swept at Ohio State, in which it only scored one goal. So the Spartans and Badgers will be trying to get back on track when they meet tonight at 7 p.m. and also tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Both of those matchups coming at Munice Arena. For each team, it's the last Big Ten series until early January. Michigan State still has a non-conference series coming up next weekend against Arizona State. Wisconsin is off until January 1st after this weekend when it plays the U.S. under 18 team in an exhibition game. So the Spartans head into the weekend with 13 points, two behind Notre Dame and Ohio State, who are tied for second place. Michigan State trails first place Penn State by 5 points. Each team in the Big Ten has played 8 league games and has 16 remaining. And the Detroit Pistons are looking to bounce back after a really horrific performance on defense against Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday night. Detroit hopes to get a win on a solid Victor Oladipo-less team, currently 14-7 on the year. The Pistons are currently 2-1 against the Pacers and need Langston Galloway to really continue to step up after a 20-point effort in the loss to the Bucks. And the bench, including Christian Wood, Markieff Morris, Derrick Rose. The defense will also look forward to stepping up against the Pacers team that has won 7 of their last 8. So tonight, that action tips off at 7 p.m. on Fox Sports Detroit. And the Detroit Red Wings, last place in the National Hockey League, sent down their most promising prospect in Philip Zadina as they host Sidney Crosby and the surging Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow night at 7 p.m., the Red Wings have lost their last 4 by at least 3 goals, and tomorrow it sounds like it may be no different. We'll see, though. Again, that action is also on Fox Sports Detroit, and your beloved Detroit Lions will be in action this Sunday on the road at Minnesota. The third-string quarterback in David Blau is in line to make his second straight start this weekend as Matthew Stafford. He remains sidelined with those fractures in his back. And backup Jeff Driskel is on injured reserve with a hamstring issue. Isn't it amazing? I mean, I always think about this. You know, when you have a situation like that of the Detroit Lions, I mean, you think that Colin Kaepernick would get some kind of shot somewhere, right? I mean, Jeff Driscoll? Really? I don't know, man. And I was watching a really compelling piece centered on Richie Incognito, the very dramatic lineman for the Oakland Raiders now. He's bounced around the league multiple times, but he's had multiple run-ins with the law. There was a situation where, you know, he had guns at a funeral home. We all know about the racist message that he sent to a teammate in his early years back with the Miami Dolphins. But a brother like that keeps on getting opportunities from different NFL teams despite his laundry list of run-ins with the law and controversies and just blatant racism to a teammate back in Miami. He keeps on getting opportunities, and Colin Kaepernick still was jobless.
Honestly, at this point, it's more of like a CVS receipt long of stuff that he's done wrong at this point, and he still gets opportunities, which...
Have you seen the HBO report?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
And props to Brian Gumbel. I tell you what, Brian Gumbel in Real Sports, they do an outstanding job. I know, I feel like I should be getting paid for them by now, how much I pub them, but they did a great job of profiling his run-ins with the law. They even have the police footage of when he was arrested at that funeral home, and he's having like this really psychotic phase in the back of the police cruiser, crying and then cursing, and just amazing. A brother like that continues to get opportunities, and Cap is still riding the bench. All right, ran over. I'm done. I won't even. You guys know how I feel about that. I've constantly just beat you over the head with that point there. But anyway, the Lions will be starting Jeff Driscoll. The Lions are 3-8-1 on the season, while the Vikings head into Sunday's game with an 8-4 record. The Lions really have nothing to play for at this point. Maybe tanking to try and get the top pick in the NFL draft come next year. But they are mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. The only hope they have in this one is possibly playing spoiler. All right, and after Andy Ruiz Jr. scored his shocking knockout of Anthony Joshua back in June, the man who had become a social media darling for his chubby physique, he talked about dropping weight from 268 to closer to 250. But that plan doesn't appear to have worked out for the WBA, IBF, WBO, way too many belts in boxing, and IBO heavyweight champ. As Ruiz stepped on the scales on Friday, today, in Saudi Arabia, at a stunning 283 pounds. Yes, 283 pounds is what Andy Ruiz Jr. weighed in at today, the day before the fight. So just over 6 months ago, Ruiz Jr., he became the latest lovable underdog story in boxing lore when he shocked the world with a seventh-round KO of undefeated unified champ Anthony Joshua. Ruiz entered the bout a nearly 11-1 underdog despite boasting a respectable record thanks in part to never really facing truly elite-level talent. Ruiz Jr. actually was a fill-in last-minute choice to face Anthony Joshua because the initial fighter that was set up to face Joshua, he had to bow out. So they said, hey, we'll take Andy Ruiz Jr. Looks like an easy dub. Well, that wasn't the case. And actually, when I saw the video, I thought it was like Photoshopped or something or edited. I couldn't believe it. But Joshua's team, they were quick to trigger the rematch clause in the contract, you think? And with the rights to pick the location for the second bout, set the clash in Saudi Arabia. So after back and forth between the two sides over Ruiz's desire to not battle in the KSA, the agreements were eventually signed. And December 7th, the big man will run it back one more time. Ruiz has a record of 33-1, 22 KOs. He has not weighed in this heavy since his second professional fight, and many pundits are now wondering if concerns over perceived lack of focus and dedication heading into the rematch are more legitimate than initially expected, because I saw a report come out yesterday that during his media availability, I mean, the dude walks in with like $100,000 on his neck. I mean, he's bling-blinging it up, you know, really happy with the win over Anthony Joshua, and maybe he's gotten kind of just fat and happy. I don't know. Is that hunger truly there? So we'll find out December 7th. Ruiz and Joshua, I will certainly be watching. All right, folks, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number you can call. You can also weigh in right now, courtesy of Facebook Live at facebook.com/WKAR News. Comment below that video. I'll do my best to get to your comments at some point throughout this hour. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. This is how we doing it today, huh? This is how, Alec, I want to jump across this glass so bad right now and just dropkick you, dude. My goodness. I'm not in the best mood today. I can't even lie. I woke up today with a stuffy nose. I've been battling this stuffy nose for weeks on end. Not feeling the greatest. And then, you know, I woke up. And you know when you wake up and it takes you a moment to figure out where you are in life, like what is going on with my life here. You know, when you have like a really deep sleep, I had a really deep sleep last night and I woke up like, whoa, let me get my mind right for a second. And then, you know, stuffy nose hit me and I'm like, oh, here we go. Well, that's still there. And then it hit me that, oh yeah, something happened last night. My Dallas Cowboys got embarrassed on national TV by the Chicago Bears. Mitchell Trubisky. We made Mitchell Trubisky look like the second coming of Lamar Jackson. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the defense looked horrible. And for those who are watching on the Facebook live stream too, I'm sure Brad Walker was in your ear, Alec. He does this every time my Cowboys lose. Let's not mention the trouncing that the Kansas City Chiefs put on his Oakland Raiders on Sunday. I won't mention that. They got blown. That was like 40-9. At least we lost by a touchdown.
Yeah, it was a blowout. Yeah, I saw that.
But Brad, every time my Cowboys lose, we have fun with this. And he writes me a nice little note for the public to see on our Facebook live stream. And with the Cowboys helmet that one of our dear listeners, the Grimes family, gave me. The Cowboys helmet upside down with the message, "Bear down, Chicago Bears." So, yeah, I'm oh, boy. So I'll take it on the chin. You guys know I'm a good sport. Not happy today. Jason Garrett will be fired. Just a matter of time. I put that on my Instagram and Facebook page yesterday, and I tweeted it out as well. I was just beyond frustrated watching that. And Jerry Jones, man, I don't know if you guys heard his radio interview with some of the local sports talk guys out in Dallas. He does this after every single Dallas Cowboys game. He has a media availability, and I guess he has some kind of contract with the radio guys there in Dallas where he does a quick spot. And the radio guys, they kind of went at Jerry and said that, hey, man, are you embarrassed right now of what happened against the Bears? Are you embarrassed? That's the word they used. And Jerry, he got very annoyed and said, look, man, I'm not in the mood for your questions. Again, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, look, man, I'm not in the mood for your questions. You know, you want to get to the point here. And he was just very chippy, very chippy. He said, I had a long plane ride back. I'm not happy right now. And you add something like that, just I'm not in the mood.
I'm not going to. So quit asking.
Yeah, yeah, good drop there, Alligator. That's basically what he said. That's basically what Jerry Jones said. So I was trying to get in a good mood, and then that song plays and just puts me back into the horror that was last night. Before I hit this first break, again, we have a feature Friday interview for you guys. Dwayne Miner, longtime horse racing trainer based in Florida, the first African-American to drive in the richest event in harness racing, which is the Hamiltonian. Dwayne Miner will be joining us in about 5 minutes. But before we get to that, I do want to talk about Matthew Stafford, because Stafford, who has had broken bones in his back with the Detroit Lions for the past two seasons, he still wants to play at 31 years old for years and years to come. He's not changing his thoughts about his long-term future in the NFL. This is what Stafford had to say, quote, I want to play for a long time. Yeah. I feel like I was playing really good ball this year, and something that was kind of a freak deal that happened. And obviously, got to take it in stride and listen to doctors, my body, coaches, and figure out what's best. But I was having a lot of fun playing when I was out there, and wish I could be out there now trying to help us win games. Isn't that amazing? I mean, you can criticize Matthew Stafford all you want, and I still don't understand it, because when you look at this horrible Detroit Lions franchise, and by the way, I'm starting to see what it really feels like to be on, you know, that down and out losing end of things. I don't know how you guys, how Lions fans do this. I mean, my Cowboys, we at least are competitive and are in the, you know, in the thick of things of try and make the playoffs every single year. But the Lions just no. Even though we've only won three wild card playoff football games since 1997. Thierry, I'm getting riled up again. But anyway, when it comes to what has gone wrong with the Detroit Lions in recent years, you cannot solely point the finger at Matthew Stafford, especially this season. This season, you can't point the finger at Matthew Stafford at all, because the dude was having an MVP-type season before he got injured and it was revealed that he had more fractures in his back. He's tough. Tough, 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 tough dude. And his numbers were outstanding this year. And the Lions, to show you just how valuable Matthew Stafford is, the Lions have not won a game since Stafford was injured late in a loss to Oakland, Brad Walker's Raiders, on November 3rd. And he snapped that 137-game starting streak the next week against the team that beat my Dallas Cowboys last night, the Chicago Bears. And he hasn't practiced since. He has not been put on injured reserve, despite Detroit being 3-8-1 and out of the playoff race. And the reason why Matt Patricia, did not put and has not put Matthew Stafford on the injured reserve, well, he let that be known this week, I believe, saying that, look, you know, it's a pride thing. Due to the respect of Matthew Stafford being the toughest dude on this roster, that's why we haven't put his name on the injured reserve list, even though it should be on the IR list. So, you know, when you look at this Lions team right now, and maybe we'll take some calls on this. You know, Lions fans out there, again, I don't know how you do it, but Lions fans out there, when you evaluate this season where the Lions only have three wins on the year, you know, what kind of changes need to be made? You'll have Matthew Stafford coming back, but now, you know, back-to-back years in which it's revealed that he has fractures in his back. I mean, can you rely on Matthew Stafford anymore? When he's healthy, he's great, but he's been beaten up throughout his entire Lions career. He's taken some of the most hits out of any starting quarterback in the league during his time as the starting quarterback for this team. And that has led to injuries. You know, eventually, you knew eventually it would catch up, right? When you have had as bad as an offensive line as the Honolulu Blue has had in recent years, you knew that if you keep giving up big hits to your starting quarterback, I don't care who it is, unless he's a superhero from the Avengers, he is going to get injured at some point. And now all of those hits are catching up to Matthew Stafford. And again, yeah, he may want to play for years to come and still eyes a long career, still at the age of 31 years old, and wants to play, you know, for multiple years after this. I just don't know if his body will let him. Yeah, he may want to think that in his mind, but his body may have another take on that. I just don't know where you, I mean, I don't think Matt Patricia's the guy for you. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole of making points on that, but Matt Patricia, for the defensive specialist, the defensive guru, the defensive, dare I say it, genius that he was dubbed to be when he got the job from the New England Patriots, I mean, he was really a mastermind under Bill Belichick, which is, it's amazing the coaching tree of Bill Belichick and how many guys who have coached under him and learned under him have gone on to be bad head coaches elsewhere, i.e. Matt Patricia. But him being dubbed as a defensive genius, that Lions defense is so porous. Holes everywhere. You can do whatever you want. If you're an NFL offense and you see Detroit Lions on your schedule, I mean, you foam at the mouth. You want to play right now and put up yardage against that team. So you got problems with your head coach. Bob Quinn, I don't know if his decisions, player personnel-wise, have really worked out for this team. And then you look at the injuries on this squad. The Lions are just, they have a laundry list of problems. And I'm curious to know where fans are at with this franchise now. I mean, we talk about this every single year, I feel like. Specifically as it pertains to Matthew Stafford, though. Do you think that Matthew Stafford, how confident are you that Matthew Stafford can be your quarterback playing at the level that he played at before getting injured and snapping that incredible Iron Man streak? How confident are you that Matthew Stafford can be your quarterback for years to come at 31 years old? All right, this is our first break. When we come back, we hope to have live from Florida, Dwayne Miner on the show. Longtime horse racing trainer based in Florida. The first African-American to drive the Riches event in harness racing. And also want to let you guys know, I know that some of you have been trying to call in. Alec Rio is letting me know that we are having problems with our phones. So, yeah. You guys are calling. Alec is picking up, but you can't hear him on the other side. So that may, because like, people have been waiting as well. You know, we're trying to give away these tickets to Michigan State and Rutgers on Sunday. I don't know if we'll be able to do that because of the phone problem. So, all right, folks, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, I'm passing along the news to our listeners out there who are trying to call in. We are having some problems, some technical difficulties with our phone lines right now. Wouldn't it? That would happen on a Friday where we had some ticket giveaways planned for you guys. Just a pair of tickets to check out MSU and Rutgers. And this is going to hinder our feature Friday interview. I don't know if we have Alec. Were you able to make contact with Dwayne at all? Can we?
Okay. So what happened was I called his phone number. He answered, And he couldn't hear me, okay. But what I did was I just simply passed it through in hopes that he could hear that you talking and that he knows that it's current sports.
Okay. So is he on the line right now?
It says that he's on line one, so.
Dwayne, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, Dwayne is there. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, let's double this back then. My goodness. I tell you. Technology, man, just irks me sometimes. All right, this is what we'll do. So I guess we can still have callers. I guess they won't be. You won't be able to hear Alec, but he can still patch you through.
Yeah, I can. I can patch people through, but they just won't be able to hear me. I'll just have to go straight through.
Well, you have to talk to them though.
Yeah,
so they can get the information on how they can pick up the tickets. So
yeah,
I don't
exactly.
Know.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, because they won't be able to hear me. But
all right, we probably won't be able to give away tickets to this Sunday's game. Yeah. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's show. Let's do that because I'm really excited to dive into this interview. Dwayne is a dear friend, and he is a longtime horse racing trainer who is based in the Sunshine State right now. I wish I was kind of back there right now. This weather was killing me here in Michigan. But beautiful Florida, where it's about 80 degrees and sunny right now. And Dwayne is also the first African-American to drive in what is the richest event in harness racing, an event called the Hamiltonian. It's pretty amazing stuff, and there's multiple areas that I want to dive into when it comes to Dwayne's background here in the sport of horse racing. But first off, Dwayne, welcome to Current Sports. This is certainly a long time coming, my man.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much. Yes.
So let's start here, Dwayne. How did you first get involved in the sport of horse racing? Because, you know, it's something that, especially for African Americans, really isn't common within the black community.
No, it really isn't. You know, we got started when we was a kid. I think I was like 10, 11 years old. And my dad had dabbled in it when he was a youngster. And he went in the service, which, that got him out of it, but when he returned back and got married and so on and had us, and we always liked animals. And on Sundays, we would go horseback riding and really love horseback riding. So one day, it was me and my brother, Demir, we asked, hey, Dad, why don't we get a horse and so we don't have to pay these people to ride? So we can have our own. And he said, look here, I got a better suggestion yet. He says, I used to help a guy train race horses. And if we're going to get a horse, we're going to get a horse that can make us some money. I said, okay, fine. So we ventured out up in around Northfield, Michigan, and come across a couple of horses. And he bought two horses at that time, which really didn't pan out. So we sought after another venture, and he found three horses that an old guy had right across from Northfield Downs in Northfield, Michigan. So we went there, and he purchased all three of the horses. So each one of us had a horse. My brother had one, I had one, and my dad. So
wow.
There is where he taught us the business.
That's amazing. And you know, with him, you know, having – this is really his first purchase, right? I mean, you know, owning these
Correct.
Three horses.
Correct.
This is his first – this is all new to him at that point as well, right?
Right. Well, owning-wise, you know, he had trained previously, you know, with the guy that was a trainer and caretaker for this guy when he was a kid. So he did know, you know, the ins and outs about training and that, you know. But for his first venture of owning his own, that was his first venture there with us.
That's amazing. And Dwayne, you're from Michigan, right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
So this is in the area of Northville, Michigan.
Correct.
So I want to go from there to here now. I'm curious, Dwayne, you've been in this business for a long time. What kind of looks of surprise did you and your brother get, and maybe still do, when they see two African-American males showing up to the track? Do you guys get looks like, oh, wow, that's different?
I tell you, we did. Actually, it was a big surprise at one point when we were going with my dad to the fair races up in the upper part of Michigan. And we got approached by, you know, at that time, it was a lot of the African-American people at the time that was Porter John, take care, you know, they did that. And it was by surprise. We walked into one of the Johns, and the one guy says, hey, he said, you guys own horses? You have horses? I said, yes. And my dad says, why? What's the matter? He said, oh, guys, they were not familiar with us, with blacks owning horses. He said, whoa, you can't own no horses. I said, why is that? He said, that's the white guy's game. I said, really? I said, we've never had a problem with that. And he was so afraid that something was going to happen that he kept saying, oh, you got to get rid of the horses. I said, nah. And my dad said, I own these things, and this is what we're going to do. And we proceeded from there. Never had a problem. But that part kind of shook me a little bit because, you know, being in the upper part of Michigan, probably where it wasn't really that familiar with blacks owning anything like that it really hasn't panned out to show people that we could, you know.
Right. And what year was that when that incident happened, Dwayne? What year was that?
That was actually back in the 70s, mm-hmm. Like early 70s.
Wow.
Like 71, 72, yeah.
So you start off as a kid getting interested into this sport by just horseback riding. Your dad says, hey, man, let's own some horses. You, your brother, and your dad, you guys all have a horse, and you guys are dabbling in this. Because now, I mean, you do this full-time, Dwayne. You've turned this into a career, a pretty lucrative career. How long did it take for you to turn this into a sole career, and what did those steps look like for you?
Okay, now, when I was in school, in high school, like, my dad, God bless him, he worked 31 years as an electrician for Chrysler, and he had his own electrical business in the city of Detroit after. So he worked midnight, and then he would come home 7 o'clock in the morning, do his business, his electrical business, wiring and rewiring and houses and stuff. And when we got out of school, we went with him to do our horses. So when we did that, you know, we would I had a bee running around me. Sorry,
it's all good.
We would do the horses and go to school, you know.
So that's how it started for you guys. So how did you go from that to establishing your own training business, I guess?
Right. Now, when I graduated in 75, I started my own business, you know, my own racehorse business, training and driving. So I had a stable of my own, and my dad still had his stable, which we were all combined. But I had owners that I trained for there in Detroit. Actually, one owner that I had, his name was Clarence Carter. He owned a Chevy dealership there off of Grand River, I think it was, in Detroit. And it had, like, the one other owner that he was partnered with, which I think it was his cousin, was Swanson Funeral Home, that had was partnered with him on a couple of horses that I had. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I started directly after I graduated out of high school, which I were supposed to have went to Denver, Colorado for automotive engineering, which my grandmother asked me to skip a year and help dad out, you know, and that. And, you know, once you miss a year of school, it kind of, and I really got indulged in the horse business, where I had like 10 or 12 horses of my own at that time. So that's what's on my mind as a forte to do. So that's how I got started. I started at school, I'm running, training. At where I was also driving, catch driving some other horses that people owned, and which the money was good, so I kind of stayed where I was at. And I'm kind of glad I did because I've done very well in the business. I've had some of the elite horses in the business that has went on and went to stud and standing as stallions now.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, Dwayne. Again, and how you've, you know, just kind of built up your business over time, and how you've gained the trust of different trainers across the nation, owners across the nation to gain your trust of training those, and you know, do you remember, Dwayne? Because you know you also raced horses as well. I don't know if you still do. But do you remember your first official race, and what was that experience like?
Actually, yes. I remember my first, I drove at a fair, and it was with my dad. My first drive was one of the horses that my dad, one of the three horses that my dad had purchased at the time. I was 17, 16 at the time when I drove my first race. And I was in a race with my dad at Croswell Fair up in Croswell, Michigan. And I finished second, and Dad won that day. And he was kidding me. Like, he said, "What happened? You were supposed to have the best horse. You were supposed to beat me. Where were you?" And we laughed about that for a long time, you know.
Wow, but that's amazing.
That was my initial drive, and the horse's name was Toddy B.
Toddy B was the name of the horse. How did that name come about?
Well, it was given to her at birth by the original breeder of the horse. Yes.
Gotcha. So your first race at 16 years old, you finished second place. That's pretty good, Dwayne.
Yeah. I was ecstatic, I tell you. I thought I was going to beat Dad that day, but it didn't happen.
That's awesome stuff, though. Again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Dwayne Miner, again, longtime horse racing trainer who's based in Florida, and the first African-American to drive in the richest event in harness racing, which is the Hamiltonian. I want to go there now, Dwayne. Can you okay. talk about the Hamiltonian and what exactly is harness racing for our listeners that don't know a thing about it?
Okay, now a lot of people that really don't know about harness racing, which is probably one of the first racing venues besides the thoroughbred racing that started. It's the event where a horse is put in a cart, which they call a sulky. And some people, when you talk to some people, they say, "Oh, it's a chariot." Well, no, it's not a chariot. It's called a sulky that they race in.
Mm-hmm.
And they pull it. You know, they pull this thing. Instead of sitting on their back, they pull it with the driver sitting in the sulky with two lines. And that's how we race.
And how big are these horses, Dwayne?
They're anywhere from, we say in hands, anywhere from 15 hands, which is about 4.5-5 feet tall. Some of them get to be 6 foot. I mean, not quite 6 foot tall, but I would say about 5.5 feet tall would be the tallest to put it in terms, in layman terms. But we would say, in our term, we would say 15 hands. The 16 hand would be probably the tallest.
Gotcha. And the Hamiltonian, it's a pretty big race. Can you kind of describe just how big this race is? I mean, maybe you can equate it to, I don't know. I equated it earlier this hour to something like the Kentucky Derby of harness racing. I don't know if that's accurate.
Correct. It's like our Kentucky Derby of harness racing. It is one of the biggest races of our of our industry. It goes for $1.5 million, and it's the top trotters. Now we have in our business we have trotters and pacers. Now I deal with only trotters right now. I've had pacers also, which they have. The pacers have these, I would say, straps on their legs that keep them on a certain gait, which their gait is more like a train, chewing back and forth on each side. So each on the same side, the legs will go frontward and backwards at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And on a trotter, they would trot three, you know, they like a normal little trot, a 1-2-3-4 beat. And pacers are at a 2 beat. But yeah, that event is one of the richest events that we have, and it's sought after as like the Kentucky Derby.
That's amazing.
It was a thrill. I tell you, I had so much fun that year participating in that event. I've been in it probably three more times. After that, I haven't driven in it since that, but this year I probably will. If this horse that I have this year stands up to what I think he can, you will see me again in the Hamiltonian.
That is awesome, Dwayne. So your first time, when you're becoming also the first black person to drive in the Hamiltonian, what year was that? And what made that so special for you, especially when you found out that you were the first black person to do that?
Oh, I'm telling you, I was in 2000, and the horse's name was Legendary Lover K, which I have owners from Europe, from Denmark, that purchased the horse. We purchased the horse at the auction in Lexington, Kentucky, for $3,500. And no one knew at that time that he would be a candidate for the Hamiltonian. And I knew training down that this horse is something special. You know, how special, I didn't know. But it turned out to be pretty special, because that year as a two-year-old, he had made like, I think it was 100,000, and the race is only race for three-year-olds. And when he returned after his layoff, his time off as a two-year-old, he comes back as a three-year-old, he ended up winning the Sire's Stakes and all three legs of the Sire's Stakes, which compelled us to put him in the Hamiltonian, enter him in the Hamiltonian, which he was one of the favorites going in. And I tell you, it had hair standing up on the back of my neck, knowing that I was going to be in that thing, which was really exciting, I tell you.
That's amazing.
Leading up to that day, and especially going out on the track that day, that was an experience I'll never forget. I can remember when we went behind the gate, and I had so much coverage from ESPN and everywhere else. I think it was 12 or 14 different newspapers. I had the Black Rodeo Club out with a tent out in the grandstand. And when we left the gate, I could hear a roar that shook through my body like somebody was shaking me. It was unbelievable.
So you were actually racing this horse in the Hamiltonian?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. That's incredible. Incredible, Dwayne. And you know, I want to ask this. And, you know, we may have to, due to time, Dwayne, I may have to get you back on here to talk about. Because mm-hmm. One of the topics we've been really diving into dating back to the summer is the, mm-hmm. you know, the health of the sport when it comes to, of course, the horses and what's happening out in Santa Anita. I'm going to bring you back for that conversation. But to close out this conversation, Dwayne, I want to ask you, being the first black to race in the Hamiltonian, you know, to be somebody who has really pioneered the way for other African Americans who aspire to do what you're doing. How much weight does that weigh on your shoulders? It has to be a very prideful thing when you think about that, right?
Oh, it is. You know, I'm a person that really likes to inspire younger generations to do what they think is best for them. And if this is something that they're really interested in doing, and if I can be that vehicle to point them that way, then so be it. I'll be there for them.
I love that. Dwayne, awesome job. Keep up the great work. Again, we'll get you back on it as we talk about a heavier topic. I know you and I have had conversations about what's going on out in Santa Anita, and we definitely want to get you back on to get your thoughts on that topic. But, Dwayne, congratulations on all of your success, and please, please keep us updated if you do have a horse that indeed does qualify for the Hamiltonian. We'll get you back on to talk about that as well, okay?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Love it. Yeah. Dwayne Miner, awesome job. Thank you so much, Dwayne.
Thank you.
That's really cool stuff. And, you know, Alec, you know, that's the thing, too. When you talk about horse racing in the black community, you just don't, I mean, you don't see that. You know what I mean? So Dwayne is such an interesting guy. And, you know, he is certainly a pioneer, and glad to have him on today's show.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting, you know, to see, you know, people being represented. You know, it's cool also seeing like stuff like that in hockey as well, because that's also a major problem, the lack of diversity.
Oh, yeah. Brothers don't play hockey.
Exactly.
You don't see that, man. You know, it's either basketball or football, and then everything else is going to come secondary to that. And
yeah, exactly.
Is it P.K. Subban?
Yep, P.K. Subban, yeah. Devontae Smith-Pelly, and there's actually Javonte Smith just got signed to the Red Wings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Javonte Smith. All right.
Yes, sir.
All I know is PK. So there we have that. Okay. Well, apologies to our listeners out there. I know I had many of you guys hitting me up throughout the hour. Al, tickets. I want the tickets. MSU Rutgers. We got Dwayne on just because we could just patch him through. But in order for you to get the tickets, again, you would have to actually speak to Alec, which he can't do on our phone line. So we'll get that figured out. I promise you guys, apologies times 1,000. But in the meantime, I want you to have a fantastic weekend. Hopefully the Lions get you a dub one Sunday. Again, Michigan State men's basketball opening up Big Ten play against Rutgers on Sunday night. We'll recap all of the local sporting action and more when we come back on the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Much thanks to Alec Rio. I know you were running around like a chicken with his head cut off trying to figure out things behind the glass. So thank you so much.
Live radio. That's all
yeah,
I can say.
Live radio, baby. See you Monday. Have a great weekend. And as always, be easy, people.